Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Nun Zayin Amud Aleph, 11 lines down. The Gemara is continuing to discuss the machloket that we saw yesterday with regards to a Shomer Avedah. What is the status of the Shomer Avedah? According to Rabba, the Shomer Avedah is the equivalent of a Shomer Chinam. This is an individual who is doing a Tovah. He is doing this out of the goodness of his heart. He's taking care of this item, and he's not getting compensated for that, and therefore he is a Shomer Chinam. On the other hand, Rav Yosef believes that he is a Shomer Sakhar. We gave two formulations of why that is possible. He's a Shomer Sakhar. One of them is Pruta de Rav Yosef, which is premised on the idea of Osek Mitzvah, Paltar Min Mitzvah, that there is an ability through being a Shomer Avedah to exempt yourself from another possible mitzvah, which would save you money, and that would be the compensation that you get. Or the other possibility is that Shabdei Baal Korche, that the Torah forced him into a position to guard or to take care of this Avedah. And since it's not really out of the goodness of his heart, he's doing it because the Torah compelled him to do it. Therefore, he's called a Shomer Sakhar in that vein. So that's the machloket that we have between Rabba and Rav Yosef. The Gemara now is challenging through different braitot and different memrot as to whether that's really true. So yesterday we started off with the braita v'echazir l'makom shir'ena, that the Tosefta that says that he brings it back to the location from which he took it. And then whether he's patur is chayav, and it sounds like there that he's chayav for gneva and aveda, which imply that he is a shomer sachar. Gemara in the end said no, as he's returning it to the place where the balim will see it. In one case, he leaves it in a place or location where the balim will see it immediately, and therefore it's fine. The other instance, he leaves it in a place where it'll take time for the balim to see it, and therefore he's a posheya for leaving it there because it's going to be a long time before the balim see it, and that could lead to gneva and aveda, and he would be responsible for that. Now the Gemara continues here, Etevei, Lolam hu chayav, ad sheyachzirena lirshuto, that he is always chayav until he returns it to the property of the owner. This is a continuation of the Tosefta that we quoted yesterday. Mai lolam, what does it mean that he is always responsible for it until he returns it to the property of the owner? Lava filu mi beito, sounds like there that even if it was taken from his house, I mean the shomer aveda, the one who's watching the aveda, if it was taken from his house, that he would be responsible for it. And that would be the lot of a Shomer Sakhar and not a Shomer Chinam. Shomer Chinam is not responsible in that way, whereas a Shomer Sakhar is responsible in that way. So if it's being taken from his house and he's being held accountable for it, sounds like he's a Shomer Sakhar. Shomer Sakhar dami. And from that you would conclude, like Rav Yosef, that he's a Shomer Sakhar from these Tosefdot. So Amalei, so Rabbo responds to Rav Yosef and says, Modina lecha bibalei chayim. When it comes to livestock or animals, I agree with you that there's a difference here. The kevan denakte luhu nigra breita bayinitura yuterta. Once the animals have already got the taste of the good life, of not going back home or running away, then you cannot assume, or it's not safe to assume, that the animal will then go back to its original owner, or if you place it in the reshut of the original owner, that it will remain in that position. Which is that we assume here, when you're talking about inanimate objects, if you return it to the Baalim, or into their property, then you've done a good job, because the object's not walking, it doesn't leave, and as long as the Baalim are going to see it, and take it, it'll be fine. On the other hand, if you bring livestock back, generally domesticated livestock, if you bring them back to their home, or their habitat, they'll stay there. So if you bring it back, you would assume they stay there. But this animal, which has already run away, or tasted some freedom, that animal, it's questionable whether they will stay in place. And therefore, just dropping the animal back off and the property of the owner is not sufficient over here. So for a Shomer Chinam, you would only require a Shmirah Pchuta, or a basic level of Shmirah, or of returning. For a Shomer Sakhar, we would demand a higher level of Shmirah, because he's getting paid. And that's the difference between a Shomer Chinam and a Shomer Sakhar, and the responsibilities that are associated. Over here, what Rabba says is, even though I don't necessarily agree that he is a Shomer Sakhar, I agree with regards to livestock that we treat him or we demand of him to act like a Shomer Sakhar and to do proper Shmirah like a Shomer Sakhar because of the fact now that it's not just safe to assume that if you take the animal back and drop it off, that it'll remain in place. And so for that reason, it is considered or classified as a Shomer Sakhar, not because of Schar Mitzvah, not because of Shabdei Rachmano, but because simply there's a problem here with the Aveda. And it will not be considered returning the Aveda, or actually be considered a Pshiuta, as Rashi says, in the Aveda, if you're simply to drop it off in his property. And that's why Rabba says, I agree. Now, once Rabba has answered that, the Balei Tosfot asks, why didn't Rabba say the same thing in the previous part of the Tosefta? He could have answered the same thing. When it says that he's chayav in Gnei Vanav Eidam Mibeito, he could have just argued that's talking about livestock, Balei Chayim. So, in one answer of the Balei Tosfot, he says, Eino Chanami. He could have answered that way. And just now that he has the answer, he can go back and answer the first part of the Tosefta in the same manner. In the second answer, the Balei Tosfot say that it doesn't work because the case in the first part of the Tosefta is talking about Geneva. It's not talking about where he's leaving it in the property of the owner, and now we're worried about you leaving it there because it'll run away again. Here we're talking about where it was stolen, or there's theft that's involved. So over there, that's not a situation in which livestock makes a difference, because Tosfot says here, Inami Sefa Aveda Davka Koi. Because it ran away or left, it was an aveda. Avalinyan gneva patur. But when it comes to gneva, it would be patur. Shein gormim lali ganev. Because he ran away, it doesn't cause the fact that it will be stolen later. So in the first part of Tosefta, where it mentions gneva explicitly, lo matzui lishnoi hachi. Can't use this answer. So according to this second version in Tosafot, this answer would not suffice in the first case, because this is a good enough reason to explain why you're responsible by aveda. But it's not a good enough reason to explain why you're chayav by Geneva. All right. Etevei Rabba the Rav Yosef. So now we turn the tables. Rabba's asking Rav Yosef, Hashev, Ein li elav libeito. It says you have to return the aveda to its owner. It sounds like you have to return it to his house. Leginato uluchurvato minayim. How do I know that you can also return it not only to his house, but to the properties that he owns around it? Tamalomer tishivim mikol makom. Hashev tishivim is a riboy to tell you that any property of the owner that you return it to will suffice. What exactly were we talking about when you're talking about his garden, or you're talking about his desolate area, or some house that is fallen in? If you're talking about a gina that is well guarded, meaning that it's safe and secure, as well as a chuva that is safe and secure, that's no different than his house. Why shouldn't that be a fair location to drop it off in? You're dropping it off in a location where it's not properly safe and secure. Now, obviously, it's not completely in the open, because if it was completely in the open, then that'd be a pshia to return it to those locations. As the Balei Tosafot note over here, that we're speaking about is perish el beruach mitzuya. It's not mishtameret except for a normal conditions, meaning that these areas are safe and secure for normal conditions, but not abnormal conditions. And so if you place it into those areas that are not guarded with a shmirah me'ula, but simply with a shmirah p'chuta, then you are fine because of the riboy of hashev tishivim. Shma minah k'shomer chinam dami. So from here you would conclude he's a shomer chinam, because the demand on him is only to return it to an area that is guarded or safe and secure, that would be good enough for a shomer chinam, but not for a shomer sachar. Amalei, no, the olam the ginato mishtameret to the churvato mishtameret. Rav Yosef says back, no, you're talking about here a gina or a churva that are fully safe and secure, just like his house. Well, if you're saying that, how is that different than his house? That comes to teach you that you don't have to make the owners aware of the fact that you've returned the item. Meaning that if you put it in a safe and secure place, that is considered to be the return of the object, and you do not need to notify the owners that you've actually returned the object. Kidrabi Alazar, similar to the memory of Rabbi Elazar, Damar Rabbi Elazar, Kol Tzrichim Dat Balim. When it comes to any of the Shomrim, or it comes to a Ganav, or a Gazlan, you have to return it and notify the Balim that you've returned it. Chutz mi Hashavata Veda. The exception to that is Hashavata Veda, Sheribta Bo Torah Hashavot Arbe. Because the Torah specifically says, Hashav Tishivim, it allows you a greater latitude in returning the item, that you don't have to give notice or notification to the Balim. You simply have to return it to a safe and secure place that's under his auspices. As Rashi says over here, that the requirement, and there are two ways really to formulate this, is that the requirement or the base requirement of returning something is notification. It's not considered returned until you notify the owner that you've returned it. Otherwise, you haven't returned it. The exception to that is a Shavat Veda, where you have a specific Zerat HaKatuv that says Hashev Tishivim, that gives you options that do not require you to notify the Balim. That's one way to formulate it. The other way to formulate it is that it's really a quid pro quo, which is that when it comes to all the other Shomrim, or when it comes to a Ganav or Gazlan, they took it from the Baalim. They removed it from the property of the Baalim. Therefore, in order to be considered returned or to do Hashava, they have to return it to the Baalim themselves. On the other hand, Hashavat Aveda, the person who has the Aveda or found the Aveda, he never took it from the Baalim. It was left there. It was wandering around. It was lost, and he picked it up. So his return does not require notification because the Baalim never, quote-unquote, notified him when they gave it to him. He simply found it in the public domain, and now he's trying to return it to the Baalim. So as a quid pro quo, by Hashavat Aveda, we don't require as high a threshold of notification to the Baalim because that's not how it came into your possession. So the way that it comes into your possession is the same way that you will return it. And therefore, in that quid pro quo, Hashavat Aveda will be different than any other scenario, like Ganav, Gazlan, or all the other Shomrim, where you would have to notify the Baalim. So you could formulate it in one of those two ways. Either way, there is a specific Riboy over here that allows you to return the Aveda without having to notify the Baalim about it. Amarle Abaye Rav Yosef. So Abaye, now a Talmid of Rav Yosef, he was also a Talmid of Rabbah as well, he questions his Rebbe Rav Yosef's position that's a Shomer Sachar. He says, At lo tizbra de Shomer Aveda ke Shomer Chinam dami? Do you really not believe that a Shomer Aveda is like a Shomer Chinam? Va'amar Rabbi Chir ba'ava, amar Rabbi Yochanan, ha-toein tanat ganav ba'aveda mishalem tashlume kefel. A person who is toein that the item was stolen from him, then if the item is found to be in his possession, then he has to pay tashlume kefel. So what the situation here is that we have two parshiot that are found in Parshat Mishpatim. One deals with a shomer chinam and one deals with a shomer sachar. A shomer chinam is only chayav for pshia or shlichut yad if he misappropriated the object or if he was negligent in watching the object. Those are the cases where he is chayav. Otherwise, he is patur. That's his patur for gneva, aveda, and any of the unsin. A shomer chinam is patur. Now, in order to be patur, he has to take a shvu'ah to the owner to say what happened to the object. So he takes a shvu'ah declaring that he didn't pocket the item, that he didn't misappropriate the item, and that it was either stolen, lost, or some other ones that took place. That's what he declares in his shvu'ah. Now, that's what's called a toein tanat. He can make a tanat gneva, or a tanat aveda, or a tanat unsin, whatever his tanah is, and he takes a shvu'ah, he is patur, the shomer chinam. If we find afterwards that he was the ganav, and he really stole it, then in that instance, he would have to pay kefel. He is the equivalent of a ganav, and a ganav who steals pays kefel. And so too over here, he's required to pay kefel. If he is a shomer sachar, those options are not available to him, because a shomer sachar is chayav for pshia and shlichut yad, like the shomer chinam. But in addition to that, he's also chayav for gneva and aveda. And that means that if he makes a claim for any of those items, and that's what happened to the object, then he will be responsible to pay for the object. The only thing that makes him patur is if he declares that it was an ones, that something totally out of his control happened, then he is patur. So what Abaye is pointing out to Rabbi Yosef is, here we have a memra from Rabbi Chir ba'Ava in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, that someone is toein tanat ganav ba'aveda, a shomer aveda that claims that he did have the aveda, but then it was stolen from him. If he's caught afterwards that he actually pocketed it and he stole it, mishalem tashlume kefel. That sounds exactly like a shomer chinam, because he was able to exempt himself from payment, discharge his obligation by simply saying that it was stolen. And then if he's found later, he has to pay kefel. If he was a shomer sachar, then there would need be no kefel over here, because the shomer sachar would have paid, the karen would have paid the principal up front, because he would be obligated in the case of gneva. And that's the point that Abaye is making to Rav Yosef. If you really think it's a shomer sachar, amai mishalim teshlume kefel. Why is there kefel over here? Karna bai lishlume. He has to pay for the principal here because he made a claim of gneva, which does not exempt a shomer sachar. A shomer sachar in that case is responsible to make payment. And therefore, there's no talking about kefel. He would have paid for the object up front. And so therefore, he's found to be a ganav. He already paid for it. He already made restitution or compensation to the individual. So there's nothing to talk about in terms of kefel. So then Rabbi Yosef responds to him, Zamalei, Hochamai Eskinan, what is the scenario here? You go and show, Toin Tanat Listin Mizuyein. This is a case of a shomer sachar that makes a claim that armed robbers, armed marauders came in and took the object from him. So that is something where he's considered to be an ones. It's something which is way beyond his pay scale. something beyond his control, and therefore he's considered to be an ones, even if he's a shomer sachar. And if they have these armed robbers and marauders that come, he would be patur if he made such a claim. The only problem with that claim is, amalei, listim zuyin gazlanu, that listim zuyin are the equivalent of a gazlan and not a ganav. This goes to the core. We're going to actually do this later on in the Masechta as to what the difference between a ganav and a gazlan is. The mainstream view, there is an alternate view later on in the Gemara, but the mainstream view, and this is what the Gemara is assuming over here, is that a ganav is someone who steals things b'chashai, that steals things when in private, in quiet. He does not show himself in the open. He does not appear before people when he is stealing from them. On the other hand, a gazlan is someone who steals in broad daylight, someone who has no problem approaching people and stealing when they see that individual. So a ganav is someone who does it secretly or quietly. A gazlan is someone who does it in the open. Well, listin mizuyain, if you're armed robbers or armed marauders, that's pretty clear that they're doing it in the open, and they are facing off to the balim. And since they're facing off the balim, they should be classified as gazlanim. The difference being that a ganav is chayav kefel, whereas a gazlan is only chayav in karen. So you solved one problem, which is, okay, what was the claim here? And it could be a shomer sachar and be patur with the claim. That is the claim of he's toein tanat listin mizuyain. That is a fair claim and a claim that would make him patur. The only problem is that even though that's a claim that makes him patur, it's not a claim that will result in him having to pay kefel, because you only pay kefel if you're toein tanat ganav, that it was a ganeva. But if you're toein tanat gazlan, then you're not going to pay kefel because a gazlan doesn't pay kefel. So amalei shani omer listim zuin kevin de mintamar miinche ganavu. Armed robbers or marauders, since they hide from people, they are classified as ganavim. So Rav Yosef does something here which is very difficult, which is that he explains that armed robbers are considered to be ones because it's beyond the control or beyond the capabilities of the shomer that's watching this object. And so therefore he's considered to be an ones in that case, and he's patur because it's an ones. On the other hand, even though it's an ones, and even though it's like a gazlan, nevertheless, Rav Yosef considers them to be ganavim. The way that here the Gemara formulates it is that the listim mizuyin always are hiding. They don't come out in the open. They're afraid of being caught. But they suddenly appear, or they sneak around, and then they confront people, and then they take off again. So their methodology or their operations work similar to a ganav, which is that they're not just walking in the open and snatching things from people and grabbing things out of people's hands. They do this, but they do it in a way which is they hide and they come out, they hide and then they come out. That's one way to say it. Rav Soloveitchik over here suggests that these are really ganavim, that these armed robbers are really ganavim, and they sneak in and they take things just like a ganav does. The only thing that's different about them versus a ganav is that if they are caught or the balim confront them, whereas the ganav might run away or try to escape, the listim mizuyin are going in with the thought process that if they get confronted, they're going to pull their weapons out, and they're going to force the guy to give them whatever it is. So the chatchila, they'd like to be ganavim, but bidyavad, if they're confronted, they will turn into listim mizuyin. So therefore, that's why Rav Yosef classifies them as ganavim. So in doing so, he really creates this situation which has the characteristics of a gazlan, which makes them patur, because it's listim mizuyin. On the other hand, it gives it the characteristics of gneva that you pay kefel. And so therefore he comes up with the scenario in which a shomer sachar would first of all be patur from claiming gneva, it's really gzela, but listim mizuyin, and he will still have to pay kefel if he's caught that he was the actual party that stole it. Over here, the Baalei HaTosafot ask a question, which gets to the fundamental understanding here of what Rabbi Yosef is trying to do, and he says, why did Rabbi Yosef go after these listim mizuyin to create the ones here? I can come up with scenarios of what's called lukmei gagon shatono tanat gneva ba'ones. Why does he come up with scenarios of gneva ba'ones? And that would be a much simpler way to understand here, because then you would be talking about gneva ba'ones. And the Baalei HaTosafot give a number of examples like that. First of all, if he hid the money in the ground, he dug a pit in the ground, buried the money. That's what the Gemara says, that the best type of safety, security that you can create for an object is to bury it in the ground. That's what he did. The shomer did this. And then it was stolen from him. What else could he have done? He is a complete ones in that case, and even a shomer sachar would be patur, because there's nothing else to he could have done, And the only way the Ganavim could have gotten there was by digging tunnels into his house. And that's exactly what they did. They tunneled into his house. That's way beyond what is considered to be normal, and therefore he would be patur. Or, imbalav choli shel tirufa dat, oh, shina nafal alav v'ones, he lost his mind, he fell asleep, or ones acher shein yachol lishmor, or some other ones which prevents him from watching the object. In all those cases, he should be patur, because he's claiming ones. So you can have geneva v'ones, vaye shomer sachar. And why doesn't Rabbi Yosef use any of these examples rather than listin mizuyain? So the Balei Tosafot at first says, Eino Chanami. He says, Umeo ikal meimar dahachalo chayish, came into Mishani Shapir, but listin mizuyain. Eino Chanami, you could have used these other answers, but he had a nice answer with these armed robbers. Mesir leik de ganavu, because Rabbi Yosef believes that he's a ganav, and therefore this is a great example of a case like that. It's one example of many. You could have brought the other examples. Chizem Sabi, the Rav Yosef, who holds that listim is in our ganav, that's an easy way to explain the case here. So that's one way that Balei Tosafot will deal with it, which is to say, yes, there are other scenarios or other situations which would also provide you with the same outcome, which is that you'd be patur as a shomer sachar, but you still have to pay kefel because it's geneva. What he calls or terms geneva bonus. The Balei Tosafot will give a second answer, which says that there's actually a difference between listim mizuyin and geneva bonus. And that is the fact that the Torah says that a shomer sachar is chayav in gneiva already indicates that the Torah is not interested in the ones of gneiva, which is that by definition, gneiva itself is a type of ones. Nevertheless, the Torah said that you are responsible as a shomer sachar for that gneiva bonus. And then, based on that, he says that the Torah didn't differentiate whether it was a big ones or a small ones. As long as it's gneiva, then you are responsible for it, and you'll never patur when it's gneiva. Near Lari, the Kaven de Chieva Katub Shomer Sachar Bigneva, Bistam Gneva Krovad Onis, and Gneva in general is close to being an Onis anyway, Svaruhu, the Bechol Inyan, Shitnea Gneva Yitchayev, Mgzerata Katub, Afilub Onis Gamor. That means that anytime there's a Gneva, the Pasuk says you are Chayav. Irrespective of how big an Onis it is, the Torah says Gneva, even though it's an Onis, you are Chayav for. And therefore, that option of Gneva Bones doesn't exist here because it won't work. What about by Listim Mizuyin? Why isn't that a case of Bones, and why does that claim go through? It says, Haino Shvuya Dekrua. That is because the Torah explicitly mentions exemptions for Ones. One of those exemptions for Ones is armed robbers. It says by the Parshia of the Shomer Sachar, Kitain Ish Oreu Chamor Shor Oseh V'chol Be'ema Lishmor Umeit O Nishbar O Nishba Ein ro'eh. Then Shvat Hashem Deh Ben Shnehem. He takes the Shvua and he is patur. One example was Nishba. It was taken off into captivity. It was grabbed away from you by armed men. That's called Nishba. And so Shvuya is described in the Pasuk, or Listim Zuyin are specified in the Pasuk to be patur. So even though technically we would not grant you any options to get out of things because of Ones, or theft with Ones, it happens to be that Listim Mizuyin are specifically mentioned in the Pasuk as being Pturim. And that's why you're granted that Ptur. So, Afo Pi, She'enun So Gadol Yoter, even though its Ones is no greater than a Gneiva Ones, nevertheless, because it's specified in the Pasuk, therefore it is not under the same category as Gneiva. Gneiva will be always Chayav for Shema Sachar, no matter how big the Ones is. And Listim Mizuyin will be the exception to the rule because of the fact that it's mentioned in the Pasuk. You can hear Seir Tosfot says v'dochak, it's not easy to understand that difference. But what's interesting is the Sota Choshen points out that Tosfot's premise is based on Gneva, which is that Gneva is Karov Donis. The two things that a Shomer Sachar is Chayaman that a Shomer Chinam is not is Gneva ve'aveda. And what the Sota points out is that Tosfot over here says Gneva is Karov Donis. On the other hand, Aveda, losing something, is Yoter Karov the Pshia. That's something that's a little more closer to negligence because you lost the object. So the Shomer Sachar is Chayav in Aveda. But based on that, the Ktoda Choshen says that if you had an Aveda Bonis, then you would be Patur. Because only by Gneva, which Karov the Onis, do we say it makes no difference how big the Onis is. But Aveda, where the whole premise of the Aveda is Karov the Pshia, if you do have a real Onis over there, Aveda Bonis would be Patur. Even according to the second answer of Tosafot. And that's what the Ktoda Choshen points out, the difference between Gneva and the Veda. Now the Gemara continues and says, Etave, Loim Amart. So now the Gemara here is quoting a Breita. Rashi says, Veloya Diran Hechatanya. He says, I have no idea where this Breita is from. The Balei Tosafot speculate that it has to do with limudim between shomrim, that we're trying to learn out shlichut yad from one shomer to another, but it's part of the limudim that are associated with the shomrim. How can you say something that a shomer chinam, which pays kefel, how can you say that by a shomer sachar that doesn't pay kefel? I mean that one of the distinguishing characteristics between a shomer sachar and a shomer chinam is that a shomer chinam can end up paying kefel, whereas a shomer sachar cannot end up paying kefel. If you really believe like what you're saying, Rav Yosef, that armed robbers or marauders that come and steal are classified as ganavim and would pay kefel, so that means that they're patur in terms of a shomer sachar, but despite being patur, they will be chayav and kefel if we find out that the shomer himself took it because they are classified as ganavim. Nimtza b'shomer sachar mishalem tashlume kefel. That means that we do have instances by shomer sachar where you do pay kefel. When he makes a claim of armed robbers. So how could the Braita say that the distinction between Shomer Sachar and Shomer Chinam is Tashlume Kefel, when even by Shomer Sachar we have a manifestation of Tashlume Kefel? Amalei, so Rav Yosef responds and says to him, Achi Kamar, Lo im amart b'Shomer Chinam shekei mishalem Tashlume Kefel b'chol tanutav. B'Shomer Chinam, in any claim that he makes, and that he's found out to have stolen it, to'ain tanat ganav, any type of gneva, he will pay kefel. Tomar b'shomer sachar she'enu mishalem tashlume kefel ella b'toin tanat listim zuyin. How could you then extrapolate from that to shomer sachar, where shomer sachar only pays kefel in this one unique case of listim zuyin? So the difference exists. It's not a complete or absolute difference between them, but the difference still does exist, which is that a shomer chinam in any tanat ganav will have to pay kefel if he is really the ganav, whereas a shomer sachar will only have that in this one instance of listim zuyin. And therefore, the Braita's limud is not wrong to say that the Shomer Chinam is more chamur in that aspect. Eitvei, v'nishbar umet. Ein li'ela shvura umeta. Gneva v'veda minayin. So here the Gemara is quoting from Baba Metzia with regards to learning about Eshoel. Eshoel says, v'chishal ish mimreu v'nishbar umet. If you borrow something and then it breaks or dies, Balav enimo, shalem yishalem. You are responsible for it. You have to pay for it. In balav imo, lo yishalem yisachir hu ba b'scharo. So here by the Shoel, it only says you are liable for two things. Nishbar, omeit. If it breaks or dies, you are liable. How do I know that a Shoel is also liable for gneva and aveda? So what the Gemara here is quoting is an attempt to do it through a kal v'chomer, which is to say that if it is true by a shomer sachar, it must be true by a shoel, which is vinishbaromate, which are the items that a shoel is chayav for. Enli elish v'rometa, gneva v'veda minayin. How do I know that a shoel is also chayav gneva v'veda? He says, kavachomer. It's a logical argument. Ma shomer sachar, shepatar bo shvuraometa. Shomer sachar, who is patur, if it's nishbar o mate, that we read before, that those are part of the exemptions for a shomer sachar, which is umet, o nishba, ein roet. Those are exceptions where a shomer sachar is patur. So for a shomer sachar, mate and shvura is a patur. Nevertheless, he's chayav b'gneva v'aveda. He's still chayav, are responsible if gneva v'aveda happens. Shoel, who is responsible for a shvura meita, ein odin shechayav b'gneva v'aveda. Certainly he should be chayav in gneva v'aveda. V'zehu kal v'chomer she'en alav tshuva. This is a kal v'chomer that has no way to undermine it. Meaning it's a good logic, and a logic that stands all tests, and therefore we can learn from a shomer sachar to a shoel that a shoel is also chayav in gneva v'aveda. V'yisak adat chal listim zuim ganavu. If you believe, like you're saying, Rav Yosef, that listim zuim have a classification of ganav, amayin alav tshuva. Why is there no way to undermine this kal v'chomer? Ikala mifrach, I'll tell you how you undermine it. Ma l'shomer sachar shekei mishalem tashlume kefel, v'toein tanat listim zuyin. A shomer sachar will pay tashlume kefel when he makes a claim of armed robbers or armed marauders that came and took it from him, and then he's caught in being the ganav. That is not true by a shoel. A shoel will never pay kefel. So what our assumption is here is that shomer sachar has a chumrah over a shoel. A shomer sachar can end up paying kefel. A shoel will never pay kefel. But now that I have a chumrah, the kal v'chomer breaks down. I can no longer say that we're learning from the Kal, which is Shomer Sechar, to the Chamur, which is Shoel, because in some instances or some manifestations, the Shomer Sechar is more Chamur. At least in Zuyin, the Shomer Sechar is going to end up paying Kefel, whereas for a Shoel, he'll only pay the Keren. So I'm like, Kasavra Itana, Karno Belo Shvua, Adifa Mikvela Bishvua. That this Tana believes that paying Keren without a Shvua is more severe or more stringent than paying kefel with a shvua. Which means that, in the case, let's just give the example of between a shomer chinam and a shomer sachar. In the case of a regular case of gneva and aveda, a shomer chinam can take a shvua, and it was stolen, and then exempt himself from any liability. On the other hand, the shomer sachar cannot do anything to exempt himself from the liability over here, because he's chayav by gneva. So now, if he makes a claim of gneva, he's going to have to pay the keren. He's going to have to pay the Karen right away. So what happens here is that the Shomer Sechar pays the Karen up front, and then if he's caught as the Ganav, he already paid for it, so there's nothing to do. And then the Shomer Chinam is patur up front, because he takes the Shvua, but then if he's caught to be the Ganav afterwards, he's going to pay Kefel. That means that a Shomer Chinam, in some senses, has a Chumrah over a Shomer Sechar, which is a Shomer Chinam has an opportunity to pay Kefel, which is not available by the case of a Shomer Sechar. What the Gemara says back is, wait a minute, kefel doesn't necessarily have to be a chumrah. The chumrah here can be that you have to pay the Karen up front. That is because if you pay the Karen up front, that is a 100% outcome that you're going to get compensated and that the nezek is going to be paid for. So as far as the Shomer Sechar is concerned, he's going to pay 100% of the times. As far as the Balim are concerned, they got reimbursed for whatever was lost or stolen. On the other hand, when it comes to kefel, it's true that a Shomer Achinam can get to kefel. But getting to kefel is passing through a gateway that says, first the Shomer Chinam says, it was stolen from me. Then he takes a shvua to that effect to make himself patur. And then he's found out to be the ganav afterwards. That's all an if statement, which is that if he's found to be the ganav, he'll pay kefel. But if he's not found to be ganav, or if he really wasn't a ganav, then he's not going to have to pay kefel. So it's not a certain outcome that you will have to pay kefel. So that's what the Gemara says. This Tana believes that when you pay Karen without a Shvua, that is more stringent than paying kefel without a Shvua. And for that reason, you could say a Shuel is more chamur than a Shomer Sechar. Ein Ochanami, a Shomer Sechar sometimes will pay kefel, and a Shuel will never pay kefel. Despite that fact, a Shoel is more stringent because the Shoel will pay every time. 100% of the time, he will have to pay. He may not have to pay Kefel, but he'll pay 100% of the time. The Shomer Sechar, in order to have to pay Kefel, will have to take a Shvua, have to be lying, and then be caught as a Ganav. Only in that circumstance will he pay Kefel. Otherwise, the Balim will get nothing back. So based on that, this Tana believes that this is not an undermining of the Kal V'Chomer, because the Karen is more stringent than the kefel. So even if though you have manifestations of kefel by Shomer Sechar, that doesn't undermine the Kal V'Chomer of learning from a Shomer Sechar to a Shoel. Now Rashi over here notes, why is it that an individual who is Toein Tanat Ganav and then is caught that he stole it, why is it that he pays kefel? So Rashi's over here, Hilkach Knoso Mishum Shvuahu, the Katsei Rachmono, that the reasoning is that the Torah penalized him for taking a shvua improperly or lying in a shvua. So Rashi sees the kefel over here as a result of the shvua or the false shvua that was taken by the shomer in order to exempt himself for payment. And that's why he pays kefel, because he is being penalized for taking this improper shvua. On the other hand, there are rishonim who say that the reason is not what Rashi says over here, that it's a knas for the shvua, but simply that the Shomer Chinam is a ganav. And when he steals it, he is a ganav. And when he's a ganav, he's going to have to pay for the kefel. The kefel here is simply a result of him being a ganav. It's not because he took a false shvua. It's because he's deemed or considered to be a ganav. So those are the two possibilities as to why he has to pay kefel when he makes a toein tanat ganav. Now, the Balei HaTosafot here spent time on this logic that the Gemara is saying that Karen without a shvua is better than kfela with a shvua. Tosafot has an issue here, because if you believe not like this Tana, that you believe that kfela is better than a karen below shvua, then in that instance, how do you learn from a shomer sechar to a shoel? Or how do you know that a shoel is chayav b'gneva v'aveda, number one? Number two is the premise for how to know which parshiyah in the Torah is talking about a shomer sechar and which one is talking about a shomer chinam is premised on this. Because in one case, you are patur through a shwa for geneva v'eda, but then you pay kefel if you're caught. In the other parshiyah, it says that you have to pay for geneva v'eda. So in that case, if you think that kefel is more chamur than the keren, then why are you assigning the kefel to the shomer chinam and not to the shomer sechar? So what Tosafot in the end says is that everybody agrees a keren below shvua is more chamur than kfela with a shvua. All that the point of this Tana is over here is to tell you that this is enough of a reason to undermine a kal v'chomer. That if you need just any reason to say something's more chamur, the mainstay of the belief of all the Tanaim is that a pairing keren is much more chamur than paying kefel with a shvua, and that's why we assign the parshia of kefel to the shomer chinam, which is the kula, and we assign the parshia of paying keren to the shomer sachar, which is more chamor. And then from that, we also will be able to learn out as to why a shoel is chayav in gneva va'aveda. But there, when you're trying to do it through a kal v'chomer, if there's any tzad chumra that you could come up with, that would ruin the kal v'chomer. And that's what this Tana says, that there's a possibility that kefel will be more chamor than a keren below shvua, or at least there's a possibility of saying such a thing, and that would ruin the kal v'chomer. And therefore, you have to come up with a different way to learn gneva v'aveda by a shoel, which Tosafot over here comes up with or explains different ways to do that. Right now, the Gemara says, Lema Mesayile. Let us say that this is supportive of Rabbi Yosef's contention that listim zuim are considered to be ganavim. A socher para michavero v'nigneva. Someone who rents a para, a cow from his friend, and then it was stolen. V'amar hala, areini mishalem, v'enu eni nishba. The person who rented it says, listen, I'm going to pay for it. I don't want to take a shvua to be patur. V'acha kach nimsa ganav, and then we find the thief, mishalem tishlame kefil l'socher. The socher steps in to be the balim because he paid for the object, and therefore if the ganav is caught and has to pay kefil, he's going to pay it to the socher and not to the original balim. Savrua kerav Yehuda. The Tamidim thought that this braita was authored by Rabbi Yehuda, Damar, socher kenosei sachar dami. That a socher has the status of a shomer sachar. In the Torah, there are only three parshiot. The three parshiot are shomer chinam, shomer sachar, and a shoel. The Gemara has a safek as to whether a socher, a renter who is the fourth shomer, is he under the category of shomer sachar, or is he under the category of shomer chinam? Machloket Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that a socher has the din of a shomer sechar. Uminiktani, and here you say, v'amar reini mishalem v'eni nishba. Here that the claim he made was a claim of gneva. And he says, now I have an option. I can either take a shvua and be patur, or I can pay, and then I become the owner of the object, and I'll collect the kefel. Michlal, d'ibai patar lei nafshei b'shvua. From this you see that if he had taken a shvua, he would be able to release himself. Hey, chidami, what exactly is the scenario where a shomer sechar can make a claim that releases himself? It must be that he's making a claim of armed robbers. And you see, even though the claim was that it was listim zuyin, which makes him patur, ishomer sachar patur, nevertheless, if they are caught later on, they pay kefel, which means that they're classified as ganavim. So that would be supportive of what Rabbi Yosef suggested, that listim zuyin are considered to be ones for ishomer sachar, but nevertheless, they are also considered to be ganavim, the gabei kefel. That's what it says here. Tani, v'achar kach nimsa ganav mishalem tishlumei kefel asocher. Shma minal, listim zuyanim, ganavu. From that, it would conclude that the listim zuyanim are classified as ganavim, exactly like what Rav Yosef said. Amrei, misvarot ki Rav Yehuda, damar socher kenosei sachar dami. Why did you establish, or why did we use certain, that the braita that we just quoted is under the authorship of Rabbi Yehuda? There is no attribution of authorship to this braita that we just quoted. It's equally plausible that the author of that braita is Rabbi Meir and not Rabbi Yehuda. If that's the case, Dilmak Rabbi Meir Svirle, if you hold it Rabbi Meir, Damar Socher, Kishomer Chinam Dami, he believes that a Socher is classified as a Shomer Chinam, then I can understand the whole braita. He has a choice to take a Shvua and be Potor, he has a choice to pay. That is exactly what the din of a Shomer Chinam is. And so maybe the braita is Aliba de Rabbi Meir. Some say it's like the way the Rabbi Avua flips their positions. Vitani, socher ketzad mishalem. What's the din of a socher? Rabbi Meir omer kishomer sachar. Rabbi Meir says he is the din of shomer sachar. Rabbi Yehuda omer kishomer chinam. Rita says that he's a Shom Echinam, the opposite of what we just suggested in the positions of Rav Meir and Rav Yehuda. Here, we have their positions be the opposite. And therefore, Rav Yehuda could be the author of the Braita, and it still could be classified as a Shomer Chinam. And the Braita would be very understandable if Rav Yehuda was the author, if he believes that a Socher is ke Shomer Chinam. As the Balei Tosafot point out over here, this answer of the Gemara is completely unnecessary. Why would you need to flip their positions and tell us, oh, now it could be Rav Yehuda? The Braita has absolutely no authorship assigned to it. If the Braita has no authorship, it could equally be Rabbi Meir or Rav Yehuda. So why do I need this Tkemachlif Rabba Baravua that wasn't necessary at all? So what the Balei Tosafot explain over here is that they are saying, according to the one who thought, or the Talmidim that thought that Braita was definitely written by Rabbi Yehuda, I can explain it in Rabbi Yehuda's position based on this flip of Rabba Baravua, who says Rabbi Yehuda believes that he is a Shomer Chinam. So that's one reason you might have done it. Other reason might be is that this is a Sugya that appears somewhere else. And the Sugya where it appears in other places, the construct of the Gemara requires you to have this Kemachlif Rabba Baravua, that they want to flip the positions in order to have them correlate with Braitot that fit their opinions. And so since this is an other Sugyot necessary to answer in this manner, it also answers it here, even though it has no relevance over here. Rabbi Zeira Amar Achamayaskinan, Rabbi Zeira offers another alternative, between Tanat Nistim Zuyin. It's a case where he makes a claim that they were armed robbers or armor orders. Veninsa listim she'enan mizuyin. In the end, when they're caught, we find out that they were not armed robbers. So the Shomer Sachar comes along and makes a claim of listim mizuyin, which means that he's a claim of onis, and he is patur. Later on, they find the thieves, and the thieves tell us that they didn't have any weapons, that they weren't doing this in armed robbery. So the Shomer Sachar lied, but in the other hand, when we catch them, we know now that they were ganavim and not listim mizuyin. So the reason that you're paying kefil at this point is because of the fact that they really were ganavim. And the reason that up front the Shomer Sachar had the ability to take a shvuah and be patur or pay is because he claimed that they were armed robbers. Not that they actually were, but he claimed that they're armed robbers. So you can't come up with such a case or a scenario by which they are claiming armed robbers to be an ones and you are a patur. But nevertheless, they will classify as ganavim when we find out that you were lying about that. And that is just not true. All right. Nafla de gina v'nehenit. He falls into the garden and gets some benefit. Mishalemet mashenehenit. He pays for the benefit that he garners. Amarav. Rav now qualifies this and says, b'nech b'ta. That means that when he impacts on the ground, meaning that he fell into the garden, and whatever vegetation was there, whatever was growing in the garden, cushioned the animal's fall. So that's the hana'ah that he's getting from it, and you have to pay for that hana'ah. Now, the next line, where's it? Avachla, afilu mashenehenit, enu mishalemet. Rashi reads this as a rhetorical question on Rav's statement, which means that only for the chavata, for the protection provided from the impact by these vegetation, that you are chayav to pay mishenehenit, implying that if the animal just simply ate it, that you would be patur legamre. That doesn't make so much sense. So that's what the Gemara is asking. How could it be that Rav's suggesting if the animal eats, then you don't have to pay mashenenit? Lema Rav l'tame. Let us suggest Rav is l'shitato. It's a very difficult havamin of the Gemara. Damarav havaleish lo tochal. Remember, we saw this earlier with regards to putting poisons in front of animals, or the animal overate when somebody else's peyrot were there and gets sick. So then the owner of the fruits, the owner of the items that the animal ate can say the animal shouldn't have eaten it. He knows better. He has instincts. He should not be overeating. He should not be eating poison, which is food that he doesn't normally eat. And therefore, it is the behemoth's responsibility, or the bala behemoth's responsibility. So too over here. We're going to suggest the same thing, is that when the animal went down and fell down there and then starts to eat, the balim will say, he shouldn't have eaten. He ate? That's an ones, because he shouldn't have eaten. So that's what the Gemara is suggesting now, that same ta'ana that Rav has, when the animal is doing damage to someone else's items and eating someone else's produce and gets sick from it, and he says that the animal should know better not eat, the Gemara now is trying to extrapolate that and say the same thing. When the animal falls down and eats and does damage, that we could say, not my responsibility, the animal shouldn't have eaten. I ate? That's an ones. That wasn't in my control because animals shouldn't have eaten. So Amrei, Achi Ashtu, the Gemara says, how can you ever compare these cases? Imur Dama Rav Hotam. And when the animal itself got damaged, then Rav is willing to invoke the principle that the animal shouldn't have eaten. The matzamale murray the pay rate, because the owner of the produce can say to the balashor, lo mashamna, I'm not going to pay for it. Hayalashalo tochal. It should not have eaten this, or shouldn't have eaten so much that it got sick. Lazukehi achrine de ptira lishlume. If you're going to tell me when it goes out it does damage to other people's property or to other items, now you want to say that you patur v'tashlumim? Miamar, who would ever say that, or would rather ever say that havelash lo tochal in order to exempt the animal from such payment? It makes no sense to make such a extrapolation. Havelash lo tochal is a reason for someone whose produce or items were lost or damaged by this animal because he did something wrong, meaning that the owner of these items put them in the wrong place. But then, when the animal gets sick or damages itself, that's the animal's problem, not the owner of the fruit's problem. That's when he's having shlo tochal. The other hand, if the animal goes in and eats and enjoying what he eats, how can you make a claim, oh, I don't have to pay you? The animal shouldn't have eaten it. That's not a claim for the owner of the animal. It's a claim for the owner of the produce. Ella, lomi bayi kamar. What you have to say here is that it's meant what Rav said in a not only. Lomi bayi achla. Not only in the case where he eats it, mishalemet mashinenit, of course you have to pay for the hana'ah that you got, avanech bita. But in a case where it was cushioned from its fall, ema mavriya harim nechsecha mirohu, let us simply say that this was a prevention of loss, not actual garnering of benefit, umashinenit, namin lo shalim. And then you shouldn't even have to pay for the damage that was done, or the hana'ah that it got from being cushioned in its fall, Kamash Malan, that you do have to pay for that cushioning of the fall. Ve'ema chanami. Why don't we say that ena chanami? It is mavriach harim nechsei chaveiro. Maybe it is this case here, that it's really just saving your friend from a loss. It's not actually a benefit to the owner, or hana'ah to the owner. So Mar says, midatohu, mavriach harim nechsei chaveiro is only true when the individual who is saving his friend, or preventing the loss to his friend, is aware of the fact that he's doing it. Over here, the Bala Seder, the Bala Gina, is not aware that he's saving anything. Here, he doesn't even know that his fruits and vegetables are being used as a cushion. Hai la midato. In this case here, he was not aware of it. Inami, mavriya harim nechse chaviro, leip seda. When do we say that's considered or classified as mavriya harim nechse chaviro? That's only when the individual doing the saving or loss prevention here doesn't lose money. Haid leip seda. But over here, there is a loss. And since there is a loss being incurred by the Baalim, you can't call it Mavriach Ari Minichsei Chaveiro. There's two important points here before we finish off. One of which is, Tosfot over here says, I do not understand why it is that when the animal falls into the garden, that you are actually patur from the hezek that it does. And that is because it's the equivalent of Tchilato Pshia, the Sofa Bonus, which is the fact that the animal could have walked down into the field, and instead of walking down into the field, it falls into the field, and therefore you're claiming onus. But the fact is that your lack of shmirah allowed the animal the possibility to walk down there by itself. And that's tchilato b'shiyah b'sofo b'ones. So Tosfot says, you know what? You're right. That is the case here. And therefore the scenarios here are cases only where the animal fell in, and that was his only access to this field. The only way to get into the field is if he fell in it, and that's because then it's an onus through and through. And that's why you are patur in this case from the hezek that it does. But, eino chanami, if it had access to the field and could have walked down, but it just happens to be that it didn't walk down, instead it fell over the side of the wall and landed down in the field, you would be chayav in that case. You're not patur because that's tchilato b'shia, the sofa bonus, which you would be chayav for. That's the view of the Balei HaTosafot. The Ravid disagrees with that position of the Balei HaTosafot, and he says, it's an interesting lashon that the Ravid uses over here. I'm just going to read it to you. V'chi eino rashai la'avir tzono b'rishut harabim? Is this really true that a person can't take his animals through the public domain? Ayachzeno b'zanva? He has to hold it by its tail? He can't let it walk at all? I mean, that's an unreasonable assumption that just because an animal can walk down into a field, then you're considered to be a posheya if it falls into the field. The Ravid says that you have to have proper precautions to prevent animals from going into a field. Animals wander. So it is the responsibility of the owners, but it's also a responsibility of the owners of the fields to prevent them from entering into their fields. And so they both are parties to this. And in that case, it's not considered to be a pshia. If the animal in the end fell into the field, that's an ones and has no connection to a poshe or a pshia from ishmira. And therefore he disagrees with the Balei Tosafot and says, even if you had the opportunity to walk down, if it fell in, you'd be patur, or you don't have to pay mashinenit. Similar to the case of when it fell in and there was no other access. The Baal HaTosafot say that only when there's no other access and you fall in, are you patur from the hezek? But in a case where you had options to walk in and then fell in, it's tchilato b'shias avonis, and you'd be chayav for the nezek. And later on, when the Mishnah says yarda, it went down, it doesn't necessarily literally mean went down according to the Baal HaTosafot. It means that it had the opportunity to go down. Even if it fell in, you'd be chayav in that case. That's the first thing. The second thing is what the Baal HaTosafot ask over here is this concept of mabriach ari minichsei chaveiro, saving his friend from loss. I mean that you're chasing away a lion from your friend's flock. That's the classic example. And in that case, the friend owes you no money because you only prevented a loss. The Gemara over here gives two qualifications. One is midato, and the other one is that you can't suffer a loss. The Baal HaTosafot proved that's just not true. If you look through the examples of Machriya, Harim, Nechastav, and Shas, that's just not true. So therefore, the Baal HaTosafot reinterpret the Gemara here to explain this. Number one is that if it's midato, if you are aware of the fact that you are saving your friend and your Mavriya Harim Nechasav, then even if he incurs a loss there, it's still considered to be Mavriya Harim Nechasav because he's aware of the fact that he's doing it. And what does that mean? As Rashi says over here, is that mitzvah hu da'avod. He's doing a mitzvah. And since he's doing a mitzvah, he's interested in doing the mitzvah, and he knows that he's doing the mitzvah, and therefore he doesn't expect to get compensated even if he incurs a loss in that case. On the other hand, if he does not know about it, or he's unaware of the fact that he is saving his friend with this property, or somehow preventing a loss to his friend, in that case, it will only be true, or it will only work where he does not incur a loss. Because over there, he's not aware of it. If he's not aware of it, he's not aware of the fact that he's doing a mitzvah, and he can't say, oh, he wants to do the mitzvah even if he incurs a loss. He doesn't know that he's doing a mitzvah. Since he doesn't know he's doing a mitzvah, the only way that we will say that it's classified as a mavriach, arim nechasav, is in a situation or circumstance in which there is no loss incurred. And so therefore, Tosfot says, in order to not be classified as mavriach, arim nechasav, you need both shalom midato, and you need a loss to be incurred in that case. So both answers of the Gemara are put together to give you this, that it's not considered mavriach ari when it's shalom midato, and when there's hefsed mamon. But if you have either one, which is you have midato, or you have shalom midato without hefsed mamon, that will be classified as mavriach ari minichasav. But then the Tosafot goes on, you can see it's a very large Tosafot over here, to look at other cases in Shas, and to understand why there is mavriach ari minichasav or not in these cases. Tosafot comes up with a number of principles over here as to explain what is mavriach ari minichasav. One of those principles is that when there is imminent danger, whenever there's imminent danger and absolute certainty of loss, that's not considered mavriach ari minichasav, and the person who saves the other person's property or intervenes on his behalf can ask for compensation or can ask for schar for what he did. Because over there he prevented a certain loss. On the other hand, mavriach ari minichasav is something that involves uncertainty. The lion was coming. So you chased away the lion. Did you prevent damage or not? We're not sure. We don't know what the lion would have done if you not chased him away. Would he have eaten the flock? Would he have taken the animals? We don't know. And even if we saw him eat one animal, we don't know if he would have caused more loss. So your chasing away of the lion is something that involves uncertainty as to what the loss was. So that's one qualification that Tosafot says, is that there has to be uncertainty in the loss in order for it to be classified as mavriach harim nechasav, where you can't ask for compensation. And Tosafot says, in our case over here, the reason that the Gemara thinks it might be mavriach harim nechasav, even though seemingly that is certain loss, the animal fell down and was cushioned in the fall by the produce of the individual's field, that is prevention of certain loss. So then why did the Gemara consider it to be mavriach harim nechasav? So the Baal HaTosafot would say here that the animal suffered no injury. There was no nezek over here. Rather, raktsar. He just was undergoing pain or difficulty. And so falling on the vegetation that was there prevented the tsar, but did not necessarily prevent the nezek. There would have been no nezek anyway. And that's why the Gemara considers it here mavriach ari minichasav, because it's not saving it from any certain loss. The second thing that the Baal HaTosafot point out is, why is priat balchov? Why is it when you repay a loan for someone, you go in and intervene on their behalf, that's considered mavriach ari minichasav, and they do not have to compensate you, they do not have to repay you. The Baal HaTosafot bring two answers to that over here. One is that there is no hefsed to the loveh, because the loveh had to pay this money back anyway. He borrowed the money, he had to pay it back. He's not incurring a loss when he has to pay back what he borrowed. That's what he's obligated to do. So when you go ahead and pay it for him, you haven't prevented him from a loss. You prevented him from doing what he was supposed to do. And therefore, you have no claim to come back to him and say, pay me for what I did. That's one possibility. The other possibility, Tosafot says, is that the loveh, the borrower, could have said, I would have, for a small amount of remuneration or payment, I could have asked the malveh to extend the deadline. Or I could have convinced him not to take payment back and to lend me the money permanently. And so therefore, your paying back of the loan didn't really save me because I have other alternatives to get out of this problem. So one of those two reasons, the Talia Tosfot claimed that that is Mavriach Arim Nechasav. Tosfot here deals with other examples. For instance, property that was confiscated from Jews by non-Jews, and then another Jew comes in and buys the property from the Akum. Then when that Jew buys the property from the Akum and then returns it to the original owner, can he demand compensation? Is that considered to be Mavriach Arim Nechasav and prevention of loss, or is that something where he can demand payment? Here the Balei Tosafot say that that is not classified as Mavriach Arim Nechasav, because here you really are saving the individual from the permanent loss of his property, and you can demand payment. And he says similarly about a case of Heirichad Mashbiach Nechsei Chaveiro, someone who invests in his friend's property and improves the property, Eino Dimeklal de Mavriach Arim. It's not similar to the case of Mavriach Arim. So here Tosafot goes through a large number of cases or circumstances to show why in each of these cases the person can demand compensation and why it's not classified as Mavriach Arim Nechasav. That gives you a just broader picture as to what the qualifications are for Mavriach Arim Nechasav, which is important because if it's classified as Mavriach Arim Nechasav, you cannot demand payment from the individual, you cannot demand schar or compensation for any losses that you incurred or investments that you made because of the fact that you're doing a mitzvah, as Rashi says, because you are willingly engaging in this, and therefore you cannot demand payment. On the other hand, if there's either certainty of loss to the other party, or this is shalomi dato, you don't know about this, and you're losing money on this, in those cases, it will not be classified as mavriach ari minichasav, and you will be obligated to pay, or you can demand payment from the person for the saving or prevention of loss that you do for them. So in the end, you have to look at every case and examine every case to understand whether it's classified as Mavriach Arim Nechasav or it's not. And then you can determine whether the individual can demand payment from the person that he saved from the loss or the possible losses that he might have incurred. Okay, we're going to stop here, 7 lines down on the top of Nun Chet Amud Aleph.